This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close today, December 9th. We were delayed a few minutes today as we watched Netherlands get a late tying goal against Argentina. So I paused the game now and to record, and I'll get back to it and going dark, closing all my chat tabs, closing everything so that I don't get the ending of the game spoiled.
Makes sense.
All right, let's get into where are we for the week here. We started off as a pretty poor week. All 11 sectors of the S&P 500 were negative this week. Looks like the S&P ended down just over 3%, like 3.25%. The energy, the worst performer, down over 8. Let's see, the best performer, I was looking at this earlier, utilities was actually still positive on the week, but it ended the week down, call it a quarter of a point or so. And everything else in between, I guess the other big ones are consumer communication services down almost 5%, consumer discretionary down 4.5%. So pretty bad week for the stock market this week. If we go to large caps were down, similar to the S&P 500. Small caps actually performed worse, down almost 5% on the week. When you look at growth and value, both pretty much in line. Growth down 3.5%, and the Russell 1000 value down, looks like 3.33% on the week. If we move over to the fixed income market, we look at the rates were up across the board. The 2-year up 6 basis points to end the week at 4.34. 10-year up 10 bips to 3.58%. Long bond, actually, it's actually 10 years just a bit higher than the long bond now. So long bond at 3.57. If you can do that quick math in your head, 2-10s curve flattened slightly by 3 basis points and ends the week at negative 75 basis points. So still pretty inverted curve. If we look at the other curve inversion that we like to look at, or economists like to look at, the 3-month to 10-year curve was still at negative 74 basis points. So that flattened slightly, flattened 9 basis points on the week, but still an inverted curve there, signaling the future recession. If we take those rate moves and see how the fixed income markets performed, we saw the ag down about 50 basis points on the week. Looks like the worst performer was emerging markets after their rip roar in November, down 1.5% on the week. Similarly, high yield down 70 basis points. So the kind of two riskiest sectors of the fixed income market down the most. If we go to the more traditional sectors of the market, agency mortgages was down the worst, down 60 basis points. Investment grade corporates down 50, and if you go down the ladder, U.S. Treasuries down 40 basis points. So if you put those together, you can see why the ag was down about 50 basis points on the week. So really, just taking that rate move into account, there wasn't really much going on this week. If we move over to the commodity side of things, the BCOM was down 2.3% on the week. Looks like energy was the big loser, down over 7%. Whereas industrial metals up 1%, precious metals up 60 basis points or so, and your ags up 25. Really looking at that, it was really a lot of that was due to oil. Oil was down over 10.5% on the week to close the week today, or to close today at 71.50. I saw a 70 handle earlier in the day. So a pretty weak week for the oil market. This is the first time we've had a week end below the below where we started the year at. So we started the year at 75.21. We're significantly lower now at 71.5. So, you know, price to price, point to point, even though you can't invest on, you can't invest that way, price decrease of 4.9% on the year. Gold gold was flat on the week, hung in there, still below that 1800 mark at 1797. It's actually up, you know, almost 3% on the month, still down 1.75% on the week. Looking across the commodity complex, additionally, you saw, as oil was down a lot, you saw the diesel and gas oil, the other and Brent crude all down in double digit. They were low double digits there. I guess it looks like the big winner, zinc up 6% on the week. I guess that's probably the big winner in the commodity land for the week. If we round it up. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Noel.
I was going to say, what about Mr. Lyle's favorite, the crypto land?
Yeah, if we go to crypto land, Bitcoin at 17,100 per coin. That's up 56 basis points on the week. I guess that that's pretty much a flat.
That's a flat in crypto
land. In bonds, we'd be happy for that 50 basis points in crypto.
That'd be a huge week.
And it's certainly decoupled from that. You know, we used to use it as the risk barometer, but with crypto up on the week and S&P down, it seems to have decoupled from that. And maybe it's trading more on its fundamentals. That was a joke, Eric. There's no fundamentals in crypto.
You know, I've always pondered though, maybe the fundamentals for crypto are the cost of computer time and the cost of electricity. And those are the two fundamental variables, because really when you're trying to crack one of these cryptos, you're just solving these math equations, and that requires power and computational time. So, you know, people trade that, they move their servers around to these low power cost areas, but that would be it from my point of view.
I guess yes, if we had to boil it down, that would be the one fundamental I guess we could use. I guess that wraps it up for the where are we, a pretty quick wrap up today. Why don't we get into the macro, which again should also be quick because there wasn't much going on this week.
Pretty brief week. On Monday we had the ISM services for November come out, and it printed at 56.5, which was 3 points higher than the estimate, and that's the 30th consecutive month of expansion. The average year to date has been 56.7, so a little below that. And the high was in January at 59.9, and the low in October, 54.4. So off the lows, but still not back to full cylinders. And I think my takeaway from that is not a strong indicator, but will definitely give the Fed ammunition to maintain the expected hike of 50 basis points next week. On Thursday, we had initial jobless claims come out, and they were flat at 230K, which obviously is no change from the week prior, but it does pull the moving average up slightly because you get two higher prints above the low, which was back at 206,000 in September. The continuing claims number came in at 1,671,000. Which was 53K above the previous and the estimate. And I think that's something to keep an eye on. Maybe some of these individuals who are unfortunately losing their jobs, you hear about it in the news, that they're finding it harder to get a job, perhaps. And that's something to keep an eye on. Maybe that will continue to accumulate as time goes on. Then today we had kind of the biggest print of the week, you could say, but it was much ado about nothing. The PPI final demand came out. The print was 0.3, which was 0.1% over the expectations. You had the year over year for November come out, 7.4%, which was 0.2% over expectations of 7.2. And if you look at the core year over year number, the core PPI, which is ex food and energy, year over year came in at 6.2%, 0.3% over expectations of 5.9. The market had a pretty tepid reaction to that. There was no hysteria, there was no conniption, but The market did go down today, the stock market, that is, and the bond market did sell off. So I take this data as indicative of the 50 basis point hike is going to come. And that's kind of me trying to analyze the market's reaction to this information. What do you think, Mr. Mayberry?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the market didn't really react when the data came out. Usually when we see a big data point, you know, when we saw cooler than expected a CPI or hotter than expected CPI, the market reacts, you know, instantaneously, and then you kind of see the move fade, and you see the move really settle into where the market thinks it should settle in. Today there was really no reaction to the PPI. Even, you know, I guess I saw on Twitter there was a lot of reaction, but when the market actually moved and, you know, the market opened, you didn't really see that movement on the open. It wasn't until late in the day here, post 12:30 Pacific time, where you really saw the market tank going into the weekend. You know, we were talking in our team chat about how no one wants to be long risk over the weekend, and no one wants to be long duration over the weekend or stocks. So, you know, it didn't seem like it was a reaction to this to the stronger than expected PPI data. It was really just more of a, you know, I guess to make another joke, more sellers than buyers, as they say. Every seller there's a buyer, and for every buyer there's a seller.
Yeah, just depends on the price. I think that's a good point, Mr. Mayberry. Like, there was no reaction to the PPI information in the morning, and it really was kind of a weekend risk avoidance kind of trade, perhaps going into the close, that saw the S&P fall. So PPI was a flash in the pan, nothing there. The last data point for the week we had was the University of Michigan sentiment. The December preliminary number came out at 59.1, which was 2.1 over expectations of 57. And so it's a small beat there, maybe a little holiday cheer. I'm not sure if we can read too much into that. I think one thing that is interesting is the one-year inflation expectations metric had a decline to 4.6, which is the lowest level since September 2021. So that, if you're trying to fade the Fed, maybe that's the data point you're going to look at. Trying to argue inflation expectations are coming down, so the Fed doesn't need to hike as much.
But as typical in these things, there's the other data point, which is the long-term inflation expectations, and that ticked up. So yeah, if you want to be you don't want to fade the Fed, you want the Fed to stay higher for longer, you point to that data point. So, you know, as usual, you know, when we get to these cuspy areas, you can slice and dice all this data however you want, and then come up with the narrative that you want to put out to everybody.
That's right. That's why you come to Monday Morning Minutes, where you can hear it from both sides and make your own decision.
Yes, that way we're always right.
So that gets us to the topic of the week.
Yeah, the topic of the week, as we just discussed, is the PPI, or the Producer Price Index. And even though there wasn't really a market reaction to the slight beat, or the slight stronger number today, we still feel like it was a good time to dive. You know, let's take a shallow dive into the PPI, because it doesn't matter as much as the CPI data point, which comes out on Tuesday. Front run ourselves here. It doesn't matter as much, but it still matters over the long term to see what the trend is. So the PPI is released monthly from the BLS. Some months, such as this month in December, it's released before the CPI, in which case it takes on a little bit extra importance. And in months when it comes out after the CPI, no one pays attention to it, even less than today. It's built to measure the average change over time in the selling prices received by domestic producers for their output. So it's different from the CPI, and you know, they highlight, the BLS highlights on their website some differences from CPI. And really, the PPI is supposed to measure the changes from a seller's perspective, whereas CPI is measured from a purchaser's perspective, you know, consumers versus the producers. The differences between them can generally come down to subsidies, sales and excise taxes, and distribution costs. And a couple of things that PPI excludes, one of those is it excludes imports. And then this was kind of an important one. It doesn't include owner's equivalent rent.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, so we've been talking about that, how housing prices and owner's equivalent rent is going to keep CPI at an elevated level. PPI excludes that. So you can see it'll be, we'll talk about it in a minute, but it does tend to be more volatile. It doesn't have that kind of base that you get from that owner's equivalent rent. The things that PPI does include that CPI does not, it includes components that are not paid for by the consumer, such as medical services paid by the government or insurance companies. It also includes exports and government purchases and sales to a business. So, business to business, if you have those business to business sales, certainly that's in PPI, but since it doesn't go directly to the consumer, that's excluded. So there are some differences here. If we do look at there's three main releases that the BLS releases when they talk about PPI. First off is the kind of the broad one, the PPI final demand. Well, those are the numbers that Eric referenced earlier. And then you can look at the breakdown there between goods and services. They do the PPI, we call it core PPI, which is ex food and energy. And that's I find that useful for, to compare that to core CPI. And then they also put one out that's ex food, energy, and trade services. And trade services are, tend to be fairly volatile. So as typical, when you have a lot of volatility in these numbers, you kind of take out the most volatile ones. And trade services is the third most volatile one after food and energy. So they also quote that ex food, energy, and trade services to try to find the trend overall in the producer prices. The way the BLS gets their data, they sample from over 25,000 establishments, provide approximately 100,000 price quotations per month. And they do a systematic sampling of all firms in the industry. So they'll take an industry, do a sampling of firms in there, and get the data from those firms. It's I guess it sounds like they ask the firms to participate. Participation is voluntary, and then they keep all the, a big thing on their website today is that they keep all that information confidential. So you don't have the data you put out isn't shared anywhere else. It's all put together into the PPI data points. The weightings in the PPI is based on the 2007 economic censuses. Is the
little lag there.
Little lag there. I know, that's what I was like. I was like, man, when are they going to do it? And then I saw that in January, so in a month, the January number, they will switch to the 2017. So still a five-year lag, but I guess that's better than the 14-year lag that we were running in, or we are running in still. But they do say that they do some systematic resampling of the data or of the firms to account for changing market conditions. So it's not, it is stuck in that using that value of weights from that economic census data. But I guess it's probably the best that they have, since that's the census only, it seems weird that it's from 2007. I thought the census was, I guess maybe it's the population census is every 10 years on like the 2000, 2010, 2020. Maybe the economic census is every seven, it's every 10 years on the sevens for some unknown reason. If we kind of look at the weights of the PPI, it's 1/3 goods and 2/3 services. Of the 1/3 goods, about 6% is food, 6% is energy. So combined, that volatile portion is 12% of PPI. Another 6.5% are consumer goods, 4% are non-durable, 2.5% are durable. And then you kind of have 5.6% in equipment, and then 2.3% in government purchased goods. Of the 65% services, 20% is trade services. So that's a big, big chunk. If you kind of combined if you do look at that PPI ex food, energy, and trade services, that's 20% trade services, 6% food, 6% energy. So you're only getting in that index, 2/3 of the overall PPI. There's another, 4% in transportation and warehousing, 32% in finished consumer services. Then you have government purchase services and construction make up that other 65%. So it's another way to just look at things to kind of see what the weightings are. Certainly there's no huge weighting like there is in CPI when you have shelter as such a large weighting in the CPI. There's nothing that kind of jumps out as that big of a weight. And I guess, at the end of the day, does PPI matter? How does it look when we look at, does it lead CPI? How could we use, or should we use PPI when we try to evaluate whether the Fed's going to hike or cut rates on those months where PPI comes out before CPI? So Eric, you put together a chart, and check our Twitter, and we'll make sure that gets out there. But what did you see when you looked at that chart between?
PPI? I think one of the interesting takeaways there is, does it matter? Perhaps, but I think it's only going to matter if it's telling a very divergent story. And one of the things you see is the PPI has more volatility than the CPI. And because of that, it can indicate the general trajectory of prices that producers are receiving in the market. But because there's volatility in there, and like you said, trade services can be very volatile. That's 20% of the PPI. It kind of takes away its usefulness from the Fed's point of view, because the Fed is always changing their goalposts, but generally they're focusing on the core PCE, you know, not even the CPI. The CPI is much closer correlated to the PCE than the PPI. So I think from a practicality standpoint, it's interesting, but it doesn't really give you the insight and the forward-looking prognostication that perhaps you would want from an indicator.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, it does, it leads in trends, right? But it doesn't really, you know, one data point this month, you know, coming in stronger than expected or hotter than expected, doesn't really mean that that's what's going to happen in the CPI data point we release on Tuesday. And I think the market kind of looked through that. But if it comes in hotter than expected, like when we saw, PPI up at 12%, it certainly indicated that, okay, there's going to be some drag or some push on CPI to keep the CPI higher.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. When you see like an extreme move in PPI, you can probably expect that to pull on prices that consumers are going to pay. And I think you also brought up a good point when you were diving into the details of the index methodology. The CPI does have this owner's equivalence rent wonky thing that it's like an anchor. And if you dig into the details of that, which has been done in Monday Morning Minutes before, I believe this year, the Monday Morning Minutes did a deep dive, the April 30th, 2021 episode, if you want to check that out. The OER, it has a weird construction methodology where they're looking at these cohorts, and they only look at the prices every 6 months. And so there's all these strange lag effects in that. So the PPI doesn't have that. So it's going to be more sensitive, and it's kind of maybe an early look barometer because of that.
It was funny when you're talking and we're talking about how it's a noisy indicator, and you know it's much noisier than CPI. I just brought back to Yellen saying that, you know, GDP is a noisy indicator, and if she thought GDP is a noisy indicator, you know, she certainly wasn't looking at PPI to give her any signals of what to do from when she was the Fed chair.
Yeah, I mean, this is why they say economics is the dismal science, because there's no precision there. This isn't quantum mechanics where you can calculate something down to, you know, the fraction of the electron volt. It's very, very squishy at best.
Yeah, it just reminds me of when I was an engineer and we were doing, some experiments, and it was like, hey, we got the right order of magnitude. That was close enough for us.
So you were ready for a career in financial economics
then. That's right. All right, well, why don't we get into the things to keep an eye on next week? Eric, you want to kick us off there?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the most important things for investors and listeners to keep an eye on next week by a large margin are the Tuesday CPI print. And so Tuesday, December 13th, the CPI comes out. The year-over-year, and this is the number for November, the year-over-year number is expected to come out at 7.3%, which is a decline of 0.4% from the previous print. And the CPI month-over-month is supposed to come out at 0.3%, which is a decline of 0.1% from the previous print of 0.4%. If you want to look at the ex-food and energy, the expectation is for that to come in flat at 0.3%. on a month-over-month basis, and for it to come in at 6.1%, down 0.2% from the previous 6.3% on a year-over-year basis. I think that's a very important data point. I think we joked about it previously that the FOMC meeting, which is going on concurrently, they're going to get the intern to run in there with the envelope, you know, with those numbers, or they've seen them before. You know, that's one of those things where all eyes are going to be on that number. And I think the market reaction, if it comes in expectation, I think the market reaction might be tepid. But if it exceeds expectations, you can expect the market to drop considerably. That would be my kind of point of view there.
Yeah, I don't think it really affects the Fed rate decision the next day. Unless it comes in like way hotter than expected. Otherwise, they're going to just do 50, but it's certainly going to affect, or has the potential to affect, how long the Fed stays hiking at 50, or you know, how long they keep doing 25s after they downshift from 50 to 25. So I think it definitely affects the kind of terminal Fed funds rate, how high we get at the end of the Fed hiking cycle. So that's the way I would look at it, and how to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that brings us to the next day, Wednesday. We get import prices come out. The year over year for November is supposed to be at 3.1%, which is a decline from the previous of 4.2%. But the most important thing on Wednesday is the FOMC rate decision, which has been pretty well telegraphed to be an increase of 0.5% to the federal funds rate. But you never know what's going to happen there, and always going to have eyes on a Fed meeting. And on Thursday, we have the retail sales come out. Going to be interesting to see that data. The advance month over month for November comes out. The estimate is minus 0.1%. The prior was 1.3%. Ex auto and gas month over month, the estimate is also minus 0.1%, a decline from the prior of 0.9%. And then the retail sales control group for November is estimated to come out at minus 0.2%, a decline of 0.9% from the previous of 0.7%. So kind of, there could be some upside surprise there, something to keep an eye on.
And definitely, then, it seems like the retail sales numbers have been very strong so far this year. And so to see economists projecting declines in that was pretty surprising to me to see.
Yeah, definitely keep an eye on that. And then we get initial jobless claims, which on Thursday as well, which are expected to come in 4K over the previous week at 234,000. And the continuing claims are expected to be flat. So something to keep an eye on.
That's perfect. I think that pretty much wraps up the things to keep an eye on for next week. As you said, Eric, it could be some volatility, and then it should be quiet for the rest of the month, at least hopefully. I hope so. Knock on wood here.
Yeah.
So I guess that wraps it up for this week. Thanks, Eric, for filling in for Sam, and I thank everyone for tuning in.
Absolutely. Thanks to all of our listeners out there today on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode each Monday before the bell. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Hit us up on Twitter at DL Minutes and send us your questions, or you can send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com.
And don't forget, check out our website, doubleline.com. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can watch the most recent webcast from Jeffrey Gunlock and Andrew Sue. And then those of you that miss hearing Sam, I would normally say to tune into the Sherman Show, because he's on there. But the last two Sherman Show episodes were Other Way Around Bros, where Jeff Sherman was being interviewed. And so Sam's not on there either. So I guess you'll have to tune in. He's going to be out. Sam's going to be out next week also. So you're going to have to wait for our month-end, year-end extravaganza Monday Morning Minutes podcast. If you want, the next time you can hear Sam, he's probably, we'll see if he listens to this and if he gives us the thumbs up here. And I guess with that, I hope everyone has a great week, and buckle up for the Fed.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine.